Seals versus Labor Board, Mr. McHale.
Thank you, Your Honor. May it please the Court, my name is Lee McNeely, and I represent the petitioner and cross-respondent Shares, Inc. and WP, Inc. Petitioners contend that the decision of the Administrative Law Judge adopted by the National Labor Relations Board is deficient in three respects. First, by concluding that Shares substantially continued Roman's business operation. Next, by concluding that the appropriate unit was limited to all production and maintenance employees of Shares who are engaged in the manufacture of glow plugs at our facility on Mausoleum Road. And finally, by concluding that on April 28, 2003, Shares had reached a substantial and representative complement of workers. Shares believes that the Administrative Law Judge erred by insisting on viewing the evidence solely from the perspective of its former employer's operation, which is contrary to the directives issued by the Supreme Court in both the Burns and Fall River.
Well, from the employee's standpoint, what had changed?
From the employee's standpoint, we had moved to a facility which was a not-for-profit facility where the goal and operation of the entire shared organization was to bring...
This is true. I haven't seen this before. You have a profit corporation, and then you have a non-profit corporation?
Yes, ma'am.
And they're what? They're commonly controlled? Or?
Yes, they are.
So the non-profit one doesn't have shareholders, does it?
No, it does not. What the non-profit corporation has is a board of directors and an overarching umbrella of responsibility over the whole operation, which is 350 consumers.
But what about the profit corporation? Does it have its own board, its own shareholders?
No, it has its own shareholders, which is Shares, Inc., is the shareholder of WAP, LLC.
And who are these shareholders?
Shares is the shareholder, the not-for-profit.
So the non-profit is the shareholder and the profit is the corporation?
Yes. And the important concept
of that separation is for tax purposes.
Absolutely. Absolutely. The important thing here is that the mission of Shares is to take our consumers to integrate them into the workforce. Some we can do more easily than others. As a historical background, we have developed an industrial services group, which, as the brief described, has six different units.
Yes, but from the employee's standpoint, what does it matter whether he's working for a profit-making or a non-profit company?
That doesn't make any difference. What makes a difference is he's now in an organization where he...
Why does that make a difference from his standpoint?
From his standpoint, his working conditions are different.
How are they different? That's what I'm trying to get at.
He's paid differently.
Paid now.
He's paid on a production basis now, like our other consumers. What we have in our Shares operation is we integrate our...
Isn't that circular?
No.
He's paid on a production basis only if you're free to throw out the collective bargaining agreement.
I don't believe that's the case. I believe that we establish a wage rate. All of our consumers have the same wage rate, and what we do is we pay them according to their productivity, which allows...
It's some sort of incentive system, but...
Yes.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, it's not an incentive system. Exactly. What it is a system that recognizes that some of us are abled and some of us are disabled, and that as we...
How many disabled employees are there in the... WAP or WAP operation?
Well, it varies from time to time. There are at least two or three now, and our goal is to integrate even more into that, which is part of the overall business operation of Shares.
What disabilities do these people have?
Mental disabilities, physical disabilities. Some are severely handicapped and have no chance of ever putting themselves into a productive workforce. Some of them are less handicapped, merely people who have deficiencies, learning disabilities, and lower IQs. These people are moved into industrial positions, and as they learn
to
progress...
So, going back to Judge Easterbrook's question, when they worked for Wellman, they were paid an hourly wage?
An hourly wage.
And now you switch that to a piecework wage?
Essentially, yes.
What do you mean, essentially?
Well, you can do a piecework basis.
So what's the essentially?
If you produce the requisite amount, you receive the full
quota of your pay. If you do not produce that amount, you do not.
So it's not a piece work system because it's capped at the old hourly wage?
No. But it is.
Then it is a piece.
Excuse me.
I'm now completely lost. In what way does it differ from a piecework system?
What it is that as we measure productivity, and if you are 100% productive, you receive 100% of the wage rate. If you are 80% productive, you receive 80%.
And you receive 110%?
No.
So
it's capped at the old wage rate, just as I said. Now that you think this is new because you've reduced their wages.
We think what it is that
you certainly reduce their wages if they can't make more than they used to, they can easily make less. But of course, as I said before, this seems circular. I don't see how you can do that unless you are first free to throw out the collective bargaining agreement. I would think that you need to find differences independent of your ability to throw out the collective bargaining agreement.
I understand what you're saying. If the record, I don't want to get outside the record clearly with respect to the wages, which in fact now are more.
Okay, so don't get outside. Instead, tell us what, again, from looking from the employee's standpoint, what other difference would the lower average wage would the worker see when he switched to your company?
He can cross-train. He has different jobs within the WAP operation. He has different jobs within the shares operation.
Of course, we don't have any information about what the other performs these other jobs, do
we? Yes, yes, but Steve Fair testified, and it's in the record and in our brief, that in fact, I believe he specified that either none of the Roman employees were doing exactly what they had been doing for previously, or perhaps only two out of the complement were doing what they were doing previously, and Steve Fair testified to that, and that testimony is set forth in our brief.
My reason is they're still making these glow plugs, aren't they?
Yes, they are.
And what is involved in this production? Is this an assembly of components, or what?
It's an assembly of components to make glow plugs. We also, which is...
So they're assembling. Before they were assembling, and now they're assembling. What were they doing differently?
They are doing it in the context of an employer who...
No, let's not do that. Concretely, what are they doing differently? They're still assembling those things.
They are not physically doing the same jobs they were doing
before. They're not? I don't understand. You either assemble or you don't assemble. How is it
there? There are other jobs involved, and Steve Fair testified that they are not specifically doing the same jobs they did before they had...
But someone must be doing the same job.
He testified that two were.
Wait, there were 17?
Yes.
Working for Wellman, 17 were assembling glow plugs. And how can just two be assembling glow plugs for you?
There are different stages of assembly. There are different machines upon which they're working. There are different areas in which they're working. We also are not...
I don't understand. Are you producing fewer glow plugs or more?
Now, but we are producing glow plugs approximately of the level that we were at the...
Okay, but how can you produce glow plugs with two workers when previously it was being done by 17?
Because we have shares employees there, we have other employees.
And we have more than two, I don't understand.
We have on an assembly line basis and in various components where you run different machines, these men are running different operations than they were. It's not just merely an assembly line operation. You are producing various components.
I understand, but how can two people do the work that 17 did previously?
Two people are not.
Then why did you say that only two people are doing the same work they did previously?
Mr. Fair testified to other people are being assigned to different jobs within the operation. That is.
But I don't understand. Look, it took 17 people to make approximately the same number of glow plugs. Now, how is it that two are able to do that now? And the 15 do something else?
Where before we had classifications which left them in specific jobs doing specific tasks, these classifications have been abandoned. As part of the shares operation where people are cross-trained, move from job to job, this is a completely different environment in which they are working now from which they worked before. That's
so far, you haven't had any collective bargaining sessions where you had done that, I guess.
No, we have not. One point I do think...
You see why you would prefer not to have to have them if
it's very it's very difficult to negotiate with a union when you are in an operation where you're trying to integrate handicapped and disabled people into able jobs and have the ability and flexibility to move from one to another.
I might suggest that it was unwise to buy a unionized for-profit operation. Not clear how that enables you to get out from under the board's settled doctrine.
Well, if I could address one other point, which I think is significant here.
Your time has expired, but we'll give you a minute later after we hear from the other side. Mr. Walton?
May it please the court, my name is Jason Walta. I'm here on behalf of the National Labor Relations Board seeking enforcement of the board's order. The board's successorship determination depends on a constellation of factors, and here the board justified.
What about, Neely's last point was good, right? He says, so it's just very difficult to integrate these, if you want to have these handicapped workers have a shot at this glow plug assembly, it's hard to work them into a union setting. If they have severe mental handicaps, I don't know, can they participate? They can't vote? I mean, how do they participate in the union if they're mentally handicapped?
The testimony is pretty clear on this. WIP, which the glow plug operation is under the auspices of WAP. That does not employ disabled people as part of an educational or rehabilitative program. It is a kind of a separate unit unto its own, and the company's witnesses was very clear on this, that the purpose of WAP isn't to...
Right, but they bring these disabled people in.
And these are people disabled people who are capable of participating in the workforce. They're not undergoing education or rehabilitation or training in the WAP or the glow plug operation. The glow plug operation is intended solely to provide revenue.
Is it the board's position that the pre-existing collective bargaining agreement with the UAW still applies to these employees? If we confirm you in favor, is that the outcome of the case?
It's not. For two reasons. For one reason is that the previous collective bargaining agreement is expired. Expired actually the day after shares took control of the glow plug operation. And second of all, because
it was expired by some terms or what?
By some terms. It was a 3-year contract, I believe, and it expired on April 29th, 2003. And second of all, there are kind of two types of successorship. There's regular burn successorship, and under burn successorship, the employer is not bound by the terms of the collective bargaining agreement. He's free to set initial terms and conditions of employment, and once he sets those initial terms and conditions of employment, thereafter he has to recognize and bargain with the union over those terms and conditions of employment. And that's the kind of successorship we're talking about here.
As it existed on the Monday after the transition from one employer to the other, is that?
Yes, sir. From the Friday to the Monday.
And I assume at that time all these factors that your opponent mentioned had not come into force.
Many of these came into force.
Should we look at them at all? Is that irrelevant to this determination?
Those are relevant.
Is it after acquired characteristics?
The bargaining obligation attached on that day, and when the union made its demand a few weeks later, at that point, what happened thereafter is not relevant to the initial determination that there was a bargaining obligation. That is kind of, as you said, after acquired evidence. As I said,
presents a rather strange situation. That's why I haven't apparently tried to operate the same as they operate other parts of their business, but looking over their shoulder, I guess, at this bargaining obligation, which, if it exists, is going to create some serious problems for their point of view, I would think.
Well, Your Honor, I would think not. I think that the National Labor Relations Act was designed not to create problems, but to facilitate labor management relationships. And that was certainly Congress's judgment in establishing the act. So as a representative of the board, I couldn't exactly say that it's a problem that they have a bargaining obligation. And certainly any problems that
they have. No, but if they have a bargaining obligation, they obviously conflicted with all the things they've done there since they took over the operation.
But they really refuse to recognize the union at their own peril, particularly given what the board found to be and what I think this court is going to find to be a very strong case of successorship where there was a seamless transition from one operation to the next. The obligation to bargain should have been fairly clear, and they refused to bargain at their peril, and what they did later on was also at their peril, Your Honor. Just returning to what I was saying, the board successorship determination does rely on a constellation of factors, and the board found that that constellation of factors favored a finding of successorship. I think what the company's really done here is just pointed to a few stray facts here and there that arguably point away from successorship. But that's simply not how it works. You don't have to have every factor and every fact aligning in favor of successorship for the finding of successorship to follow. Otherwise, that ideal case of successorship would almost never occur because it is inevitable that an employer who assumes a new business or buys a new business will make some changes of some substance.
So how does a company decide whether it's a successor? Get an advisory opinion from the board?
It can't do that.
Well, what can it do? You're suggesting a very vague standard, right?
Well,
some changes, but not too many or something like that.
Well, it's the standard that the Supreme Court has accepted on the...
Well, that doesn't mean it's a useful standard, right?
It's certainly the standard that we have as a standard.
Yeah, but what does it mean?
It's not the Supreme Court's standard anyway. The Supreme Court said that the board was entitled to use a particular standard, so it's the board's standard.
Yes, I'm sorry, I was a little glib there. It's a standard that the Supreme Court has approved of as being a reasonable interpretation of the act. But I would suggest in this case where you make a seamless transition from one employer to the next, where you hire...
What is the standard?
The standard is there are two elements to the standard. First, you need to have a substantial continuity between the first business and the second business. Second element is that you have to have a bargaining unit that remains appropriate from the first business to the second business.
Well, that's the critical one, right?
Well, there are critical
elements. Well, the first is relatively straightforward. What's the third?
And then the third is that you need to have a substantial and representative complement a majority of former employees at a time when the new operation has reached a substantial and representative complement of employees.
So the second one is the fuzzy one.
The
suitability of the bargaining unit.
The bargaining unit determinations are, the board does have a great deal of leeway in making bargaining unit determinations, but here you have a bargaining unit that was historically represented, a bargaining unit that the ALJ and the board approved of this finding found that these employees share a community of interest with each other, and that's a community of interest that is shared by no other employees in the entire shares operation. So in that event, and it is clear from the evidence that this is a group of employees who stand really apart from the other employees, and because they were unionized before, successorship findings should follow. I see that my time is up, so unless the panel has...
Okay, well, thank you, Mr. Walter. Ms. Mason?
I'm Nora Macy, and I represent the UAW. As the court has suggested, there may be instances where successorship issues become very gray and iffy. But this particular case is pretty classic successorship. You have a group of employees producing glow plugs in a facility on Friday, and they are terminated as of the end of that day by their former employer, now in bankruptcy. The following Monday, the same employees, or a group of the same employees, come into the same facility, work on the same order, under the same supervisors.
But suppose, following up on what Judge Kirby said, suppose they had instituted all their changes over the weekend, the cross-training, and had only two of these 17 who work on the assembly line, and they have new machines, a new facility. Well, then what would they do?
Well, suppose it were a different case. If there were a hiatus, if they purchased new machinery.
Yeah, right, precisely. That's, yeah.
Well, then you would have a...
What?
You would have a more difficult case.
Well, that's not very helpful. How do you decide it?
Well, what I would suggest is that this case...
Yes, I know, but how do you decide your more difficult case?
There's a difference as Fall River Dying. And there's
no, no, let's look at my case. My hypothetical case, which actually is Mr. McNeely's case, or maybe in the wrong time.
Well, a very different time frame.
Yes, but suppose, as I say, suppose you made all these changes before the merger, so before it took effect. So.
I think changes have to be significant with respect to the representational choice of the employees. In other words, they have to make it a different workplace in order to rebut the presumption that employees who were union members and represented by the union and chose union representation in the prior workforce now may not choose union representation. So I think those changes would have to be something much beyond cross-training. Cross-training is an ordinary kind of change that happens in the workplace. You have to understand that the UOW represented these employees for 30 years through three different owners prior to shares. There were surely changes in supervisors, changes in processes, changes in products, changes in customers. A union's majority status is not rebutted by change unless that change is so drastic that the presumption of continued choice of the union as a representative is rebutted. And what I'm suggesting is that the kinds of changes that Mr. McNeely has established, even if it's relevant to push them out over time, are not those types of changes. It's important to remember that this glow plug operation was not purchased by shares as part of its rehabilitation system. And I think Mr. McNeely has to some extent blurred distinctions that were quite clear in the record. The reason they purchased this glow plug is for a number of years they had this satellite operation, which was actually larger than the production. And that was the operation where they did use severely handicapped people to inspect and package the glow plugs. This was a very important operation for shares in connection with its mission. It's admitted in the record that they considered moving the people that were doing that operation into the production area of the glow plug operation, and they decided not to because they are so different. That operation is one where people require a lot of training and a lot of assistance. So this glow plug operation is a part of shares because it provides work in connection with its rehabilitation mission, and also because it provides money to support its rehabilitation mission. It's the only profit center they have.
Okay, well, thank you very much, Ms. Benson. So, Mr. McNeely, we'll give you a minute on where the time expired.
If you determine that the NLRB standard is correct, then there would be no possibility for an organization like shares to ever purchase a profitable organization and integrate it into their overall business plan. What Ms. Macy said at the end is absolutely correct.
Well, in fact, one year will persuade the UOW to let you integrate later on, isn't that correct?
They did not have a representative majority once these employees became employed by shares, because when they were brought into the shares operation, they were combined with the 25 inspection and packaging employees, which we already had working there. That gave us a unit of 43 employees, of which they are a minority. The mistake the administrator made was he looked at it only on Monday. What happened on that Monday? Once we integrated into our...
It wasn't a matter of discretionary determination, but what they... You count the numbers. I mean, he could have said, well, let's start with your hints and probably probably produced a good argument for that, but I
think the absolute worst thing you could pick,
it was the lowest number of employees who were kept around only to finish off a leftover job for the government, that in no way represented the vision of shares or the substantial and reasonable complement of employees which we either intended or which we ultimately accomplished. When we accomplished that goal...
Is the assembly or the manufacturer, is that in the same building with the inspection and packaging?
It is not now.
It has not been in the past. It can be. That is work that the union has always claimed is part of their union work, because their president testified that they tried to bring inspecting and packaging back into the union, but that the contract they had negotiated with Wellman allowed us to outsource. So really, this is union work that we outsourced to shares under the particular terms and conditions of our contract.
Okay. Thank you. Thank you. Both sides. This case for